Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can everyone hear me okay? Thank you. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. I'll just talk a little bit about the panel and then talk about the rules of engagement, so to speak, for tonight, just what our expectations are and what your expectations should be about the way the panel operates tonight. The Wollongong Local Planning Panel is an independent panel established under New South Wales planning legislation. The panel is, apart from myself as chair, I'm appointed directly by the Minister for Planning. The other panel members are appointed by the council, and I'll ask them each to introduce themselves to you shortly. Just let you know that the proceedings are recorded tonight. So that goes on the public record. So I'd ask you two things. One, make sure you speak into the microphone when I call you up to speak, so your comments are recorded. And secondly, just to be aware of the fact that you are being recorded and show respect to your fellow speakers. My background is in town planning. I'm a town planner. Have about 35 years plus experience working in local government and state government in various planning roles and executive roles. Most recently, I operate my own private planning practice. I sit on a Wollongong panel as an alternate chair, also as an expert, planning expert. I also chair Lane Cove panel and Bayside Council panel. I'll just ask each of the other members to introduce themselves. Larissa.
Good evening. I'm Larissa Ozog. I'm a town planning consultant, so an expert in planning. I've worked at a number of councils. At the moment I'm working at Georges River Council, helping with their development assessment work. And I've also had quite extensive private practice experience, but essentially on the panel my role is as an expert town planning consultant. Thanks.
Helena.
Good evening. My name's Helena Miller. I'm also a planning consultant. I've got some 29 years planning experience. I've worked in local government and state government, and I now run a planning practice. I've been on this panel for, I think, over 11 years, and I operate as a planning expert on the panel. I think that's about it. Thanks.
My name's Andrew Nolson. I'm a community representative appointed by the council. I'm a resident of Wollongong and have been since the mid-80s. My background is 40 years in local government as a planner and in management, and I've been retired for 8 years. So I'm here as a community representative.
Thank you. I'll just ask each panel member whether they have any conflict of interest to declare. None from me. And just for your information, each of the panel members will sign a declaration tonight which goes on the public record confirming that they have no conflict of interest with any of the items. How we operate tonight, we have a number of speakers registered. We'll ask the speakers to come forward and make their presentation to the panel. Each speaker has 5 minutes. Council staff will be timing that 5 minutes, and when you hear a sound, you know that your 5 minutes is up, and I'd ask you to, and I will ask you at that point, if you're still talking, to summarise and finalise your presentation, because we do have a number of speakers, and if everyone takes, you know, longer than their 5 minutes, it makes it a very long afternoon. This panel will make decisions tonight after the meeting, after we've heard presentations from you. We close the public meeting. The panel will deliberate and make its decisions. Those decisions will be published on the council's website, usually within 3 working days. So you need to keep an eye on the website for the minutes of this panel. Now, we have 2 items tonight. We have 12 speakers registered for the first item and 1 speaker registered for the second item. I'm going to ask you, the people who are here for item one, whether you object to me swapping the order of the items on the basis that you'll only have to wait 5 minutes to hear the speaker for the second item, whereas otherwise that person will be waiting for over an hour or two. So is everyone reasonably happy? Everyone happy to do that? No violent objections? Mr. Knowles, I know you're happy to do it because you're the speaker on the second item. So look, that being the case, we'll do item two first, 2 Blackett Street, North Wollongong, which is an application for a residential flat building. We have one speaker registered, Mr. Knowles, if you'd like to come forward and make a presentation.
Pepperiki in Carmel Street, 1618 in the Peak, 14 Carmel Street.
Into the microphone, thanks.
Sorry, I have no formal town planning qualifications, but I have checked because I'm speaking at the Joint Regional Planning Panel where there's a development and I have to double check. But I do not have formal town planning qualifications, but I have been a consultant. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity. I'm here in three possible ways. One, I originally requested the DA to be re-advertised as the description was a two-storey residential development, which was totally wrong. I note that also a development in Kemmer Street has had to be re-advertised because it was originally advertised as shopped-up housing with 38 units where it has 102 units. But that particular DA will be going to the Joint Regional Planning Panel because the estimated cost is over $40 million. Secondly, both Neighbourhood Committee Area 6, established in 1993, and its successor Neighbourhood Forum 5, established by the three administrators after council was dismissed, have been requesting a public park in the Smiths Hill area for over 20-odd years. There is no public park in that area, and council has consistently said that Stewart Park and North Beach is the public recreation park area for people in the area, despite Jane Irwin, landscape architect, recommending a public park in Smiths Hill. For your information, Jane Irwin, landscape architect, was one of the four firms in the consortium that won the international award for Darling Harbour. Thirdly, I served as one of the two community members on the working party that developed the 2000 plan of management for Stewart Park, North Beach. The other community representative was Mrs. Betty Perry, who died in 2014. The area of North Beach Stewart Park is, in my opinion, and I believe the statistics will endorse it, is the most highly used public area in Wollongong. It has great heritage value, as indicated by the state heritage listing of the North Beach area. So any development must recognise the heritage in the area and the importance of the North Beach and the recognition that at this stage Stewart Park is overutilised, although council is trying to look at increasing beachfront parking. When the DA was advertised, there has been concern as to whether it would amount to a motel or whether there'd be short-term accommodation. I regret that there was no discussion with the community before the developers put in the application. I'm a firm believer that developers should always discuss their development with the local area before submitting a DA. This was one of the things that council was recommending in the early 2000s before the ICAC investigation. I still don't know whether and I still don't believe the community knows what its future is. In my opinion, you'd sell the studio units to people in Sydney or elsewhere who would use it as a weekend accommodation at North Beach rather than using the Novotel. Reference to the nearby Novotel Hotel because of its height and nature, I believe, should be ignored. Previously, I lived in Pepperiki, a unit next to Creston, which is the only 15-level residential building in Smiths Hill. Although I didn't object to the building because I had greater separation distance because of its height to where I lived, there seems to be almost unanimous community opposition to Pepperiki and to Creston and its height for 15 storeys. I would refer in this issue to Battery Point in Hobart. I recognise Hobart values its heritage and values tourism and doesn't have probably development pressures in Wollongong. However, in Battery Point, there was one residential building built of approximately 9 storeys. It has been the only one built because there was so much community opposition that the council there has recognised St George's Church, an 1836 Georgian-style church with a magnificent spire as setting the height for Battery Point because it reflects the character of Battery Point. I am sorry there's reference in the report that suggests that the developers have said that the approval hasn't been granted in 40-odd days and they are going to the Land Environment Court. I would much prefer that that antagonistic element in the Land Environment Court, when one party is opposing the other party, that there'd be a holistic approach and the developer would be encouraged to consult with the community and council to develop a DA that is more consistent and recognises the heritage and the social importance of the North Beach Stuart Park area, because this site is immediately adjacent to it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for trying to outline what I perceive is the importance of this DA. If it's approved, it means that virtually any development near a heritage place can be approved, even if it adversely affects the heritage of the area and the social values of the community.
Thank you, Mr. Niles. Well, that concludes item two. So we'll move on to item one.
Oh, no questions.
No questions.
I don't think I ever get a question, do I?
No, perhaps I should explain the role of the panel. The role of the panel is an independent panel, independent from the council. We have read the reports prepared by the council staff, which you have no doubt read as well. Our role is to consider the reports before us and to make the decision on the applications. So this panel as a panel is the consent authority.
So you will be the guys making the decision?
We will make the decision.
It's just that council registered me to speak. I don't actually need to speak. I just wanted to ask some questions.
So can I ask who you are? And but you're the first speaker for item one. Well, we're not quite there yet, okay. So. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the previous.
No. I just needed to know the developers of the George Street.
Well, the applicant's registered and the applicant's town planner is registered to speak. How the panel operates is we hear from the submitters first, yourself and your neighbours, I'm assuming most of them are. Once you have all spoken, then we hear from the applicant. The panel has an expectation that the applicant will, as well as present their development, that they will take some time to respond to the issues or questions that you may have raised in your submissions to the panel. So just be aware that the applicant might get longer than 5 minutes to speak. That's the reason, because the panel expects them to respond to the issues that you're raising. Okay. Eileen Fennell, you're the first registered speaker.
Just Jerry, for a minute, can I just ask, does that mean the applicant is not front of the panel for Blackett Street?
Oh, yeah, that's correct.
Thank you. I just wanted that noted.
Yep.
And so that I don't misrepresent it to people when I report that.
No, the applicant's not registered to speak. I don't know whether the applicant's in the room or not, but certainly not registered to speak. All right.
Okay,
and please speak into the microphone so your comments are recorded.
Okay. Thank you. Number 20 at George Street, I don't know if the applicant is aware, but it's right opposite Kelton Lane on the other side of George Street. Like Kelton Lane is actually a bridge over Hewitt's Creek. And I'm sure Wollongong Council will by now know the Hewitt Creek floods, and it floods nearly every year if we have heavy rain. These townhouses are not appropriate for that piece of land. 5 townhouses are far too many. And my concern is the flooding, that stormwater drains like coming from the gutters of those townhouses will have a big impact on Hewitt's Creek. And houses from Kelton Lane down to the bottom of George Street and Lachlan Street on the other side, the bottom of Lachlan Street, those people constantly flood. And I'm just worried about the extra impact that development will have on the creek. I want to ask the developers why they feel like they need to remove old established trees, and what steps they're going to put in place to replace them, and what steps they're going to put in place to stop flooding and protect the creek. And that's it. I would like some answers.
Thank you. We'll be asking the applicant to address those matters.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Annette Jones. Yes, if you can start with your address, please.
Hi. I'm Annette Jones, and I live at 18 Roxburgh Avenue, Thirroul. Rightio. Dear esteemed panel members and other residents, my name is Annette Jones, as I've said, and I'm here to represent the Thirroul Village Committee, which is known as the TVC. The TVC is a group of residents who are passionate about the quality of life for those who live in Thirroul and meet on a bi-monthly basis. The TVC became involved in this DA after talking to a number of concerned residents who are here tonight who live close to the proposed development. I personally did a mail drop inviting people in the proximity of the DA to meet and discuss the impact of this development. We note that there have been some changes since the original DA that have met Council's requirements. To the residents, though, a number of concerns remain. These concerns will be addressed here tonight by those residents who live nearby and those who have contacted the TVC. I do note that there are some additional ones to the ones I've got listed. These speakers will address separate areas of concern that have been identified as follows: Murray Jones, site location and character; Nick Gartrell, streetscape and aesthetics; Aaron Sutcliffe, traffic issues; Nigel Puckridge, safety and Kelton Lane; Jeremy Park, precedent setting; Brendan Stoke, amenity of the adjoining property; Patricia Donaldson, amenity of the adjoining property; and Braden Ellum, analysis of Council's response to objections and a summary. Let me say from the outset that the TVC is not anti-development. We realise that change is inevitable and we respect the planning process. However, the TVC strives to maintain the identity and character of Thirroul that has been built up over many years. This identity and character warrants the current Wollongong Development Control Plan to devote a 47-page section specifically to Thirroul, and it's called Chapter 12, Thirroul Village Centre. Although this proposed development lies just outside the Thirroul Village Centre, the character and form of the area remains important. The part of George Street in which this DA sits is designated R2, low density residential. Thus, this DA is possibility. However, let's look at some of the guidance provided by the Wollongong Development Control Plan. According to Chapter B1, Residential Development of Wollongong DCP 2009, Section 4.8, Building Character and Form, the objective of any development is to design residential development that responds to the existing character and the future character of the area, and to ensure building design contributes to the locality through a design that considers building scale, form, articulation, and landscaping. Given that the majority of dwellings surrounding this proposal are classic standalone weatherboard houses with pitch roofs, with no townhouses nearby, how can you support the idea that this development responds to the existing and future character of the street? The development as currently proposed will stand out from the rest of the dwellings in the street as it is so different to the rest of the streetscape. In fact, section 4.8.2, Development Controls, state that large, bulky forms are to be avoided, particularly in visible locations. The use of extended terraces, balconies, sun-shading devices and awnings will help reduce the apparent bulk of the buildings. A small balcony at the front right-hand side of the building is proposed, but looking at the drawing, the front is very flat and bulky looking. Due to the scale and bulk of the proposed development, how can you agree to the premise that this fits in with the streetscape and makes a positive contribution to the area? It would be preferable if the developer could review this proposal with the view to reducing the size of the development. Would it be possible to maybe reduce it to 3 or 4 standalone villas without voids? Or even better, 2 semi-detached buildings with building materials that blend with the surrounding dwellings. This would provide room for better design, especially in relation to the streetscape, and a more spacious living for those who purchase the units. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just ask you a little bit about the Thirroul Village Committee, how you're constituted and...
Actually, you're probably better asking about that particular part, Murray. He's the second speaker.
Yep.
He knows more about that side because he's actually the secretary of the Thirroul Village Committee.
Yeah.
But
so
we've been around for quite a while.
Yeah, it's a local resident group who, I assume, get together to talk about issues that the area is facing.
Definitely, most definitely. And cover a whole range of things. It's not just development, but the Thirroul Village Committee gets involved in the Thirroul Art and Seaside Festival.
Right.
They help run that, and they do a lot of cleaning around, like cleaning of graffiti and the gardens. They've actually established quite a lot of gardens, and there's a couple of members who actually walk around on a daily basis picking up rubbish.
Very good. Okay, thank you for that.
That's all right. Thank you.
The next speaker is Murray Jones.
Hi, my name's Murray Jones. I'm the Secretary of the Thirroul Village Committee. I live at 43 Fords Road, Thirroul, and I'd like to present as follows. So let's consider the surrounding streetscape for this new DA. To the east, there's 5 houses to the end of the block that can be described as classic freestanding bungalows. They're mainly weatherboard and, by appearance, very well maintained. Similarly for the 5 houses to the west. Across the road, 10 similar houses again, except most have exceptional gardens because the Hewitt's Creek cuts through every property. Now, a multi-dwelling development across Hewitt's Creek, known for its flood risk, would be expensive. So I think it's fair to say that the 10 bungalows across the road will be there for a long time. So right in the middle of a matching collection of 20 or so classic homes, half of which will probably never be suitable for townhouse construction, one dwelling has reached its end of life. So what should happen? Well, let's consider. Now there are a number of multi-dwelling townhouses complexes in the street. All these are well-built solid brick structures with visual appeal designed to match the era of the surrounding dwellings. But this DA is very different. Is it not fair to say that this DA for 5 dwellings takes the form of a single large oblong-shaped slab whose bulk and shape lends itself more to a chicken farm or an army barracks than to something that fits within the surrounding 20 single bungalows on large blocks? Let's look at some of the general residential requirements or general residential controls that apply to this DA. The first objective is to encourage buildings which integrate within the streetscape and the natural settings while maintaining the visual amenity of the area. So integrate with the streetscape, maintain the visual amenity. How can a design so different to all of its surrounding dwellings integrate within the streetscape now and in the future, especially when half the surrounding homes will probably always stand alone, will always be standalone bungalows, and most of the rest are maintained to an exceptional level? How can a DA that is so different in shape and form to the 20 similar buildings where all five dwellings will look directly into the neighbours that surround it, maintain a visual amenity of the area? Surely the visual amenity of the neighbours must be degraded by having all these five dwellings looking into their properties. Okay, an additional point from the design constraints is to encourage building form of dwelling that does not have a negative impact on the visual amenity of the adjoining residences. So no visual impact. At times it is best to use the classic vernacular. I think this building will be viewed as sticking out like a sore thumb. Okay, another is to ensure that the development responds to both its natural and built content. I think I've covered that. To ensure building designs contribute to the locality through a design that considers built scale, form and articulation and landscaping. In my eyes, this will be five homes joined together into one big oblong-shaped slab. How can its appearance not degrade the classic neighbourhood? Section 4.8.2 of the Development Control states that large, bulky forms are to be avoided, particularly in visible locations. New dwelling houses within established residential areas should be sympathetic with the existing characters of the immediate locality. Isn't this, relative to its 20 neighbours, a large, bulky form to be avoided? Okay, 4.8.2.4 and 5 say, all residential buildings must be designed with building frontages and entries clearly addressing the street frontage. The appearance of blank walls or walls with only utility windows on the front elevation will not be permitted, including windows in which they are small and or translucent, and hence are not permitted within the front elevation of a dwelling. Well, I think this clause fits the building. So really, I think it's fair to say that this building in its current shape and form does not meet many of the general requirements and thus is simply not suitable for this site. I suggest a new design designed to blend in with and not degrade the neighbourhood. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Exactly 5 minutes. Well done. The next speaker is Nick Gartrell. If you'd start with your address, please.
Certainly. Nick Gartrell at 32 George Street, Thurrell. Mr. Chairman, panel members, thank you for this opportunity to address you. I have three main areas of concern to raise, sort of interlinked and somewhat overlapping with previous speakers: streetscape, heritage and public interest. As the panel would be aware, the proposal for 28 George Street directly contradicts key elements of Wollongong Council's future character statement for Thurrell. The proposal is quite clearly not sympathetic with the existing streetscape, which is one of the oldest areas in Thurrell, characterised by 50 to 110-year-old houses, freestanding weatherboards with pitched roofs. The proposed development is an ultra-modern, flat-roofed, medium-density structure which has no commonality with any nearby buildings. Across New South Wales, consistent streetscape is being identified as a key element in conservation status of suburban dwellings. The township of Berry has a clearly stated goal of development maintaining streetscapes that are sympathetic to their existing character. Councils such as Willoughby and the Inner West in Sydney use both large and scattered small conservation areas to preserve what remains of their federation character. Initiatives in other councils involve identifying streetscapes of high-quality representative examples of single-detached houses from the Federation, interwar and post-war periods. The area around and including No. 28 George Street would appear to qualify for protection from incongruous development by these councils. Wollongong Council has attempted to justify its approval of the proposal with the statement, it is likely that the older housing stock will be modernised over time. As the owner of an early Federation weatherboard cottage, I strongly refute the implication that modernisation equates with demolition. Demolition of sound houses purely for profit is contrary to the modern principles of sustainability and efficient resource use, and demolition is not necessary to provide more housing at 28 George Street. The issue of heritage is important in considering streetscape and seems to have been very narrowly defined for the purposes of Council's development assessment, as evidenced by Council's statement that the site is not in the visual catchment of nearby heritage items. There are only two heritage properties listed in Wollongong Library's suburb profile for Thirroul, one of which is the former Methodist Church, built in 1911. The Weatherboard Federation Hall is described as one of a few surviving buildings of Thirroul that date to the early 20th century. It has representative cultural, social, architectural, townscape and aesthetic value. The two listed heritage buildings are the same age as or younger than many of the houses near 28 George Street, as George Street was once the main street and had the police station. In terms of age and style, this area quite clearly has significant heritage value despite its lack of official listing. Central to the debate on this proposed development is the issue of public good versus private gain. Places and the attributes that characterise them are a major part in the personal identities we construct for ourselves. And here and abroad, I've seen firsthand the personal loss and grief felt by individuals at the removal of built heritage, whether through development and or disaster, with people no longer recognising the areas they grew up in or live in. Our built heritage represents so much more than separate bundles of building materials. In its consideration of the public interest in this development, Council stated that the development is not expected to have unreasonable statements on the environment or amenity of the locality, and that it is appropriate with consideration of the character and is in the public interest. These are nebulous statements at best, potentially quite inaccurate, and 31 received objections indicate quite clearly that Wollongong Council has erred in its assessment of the public interest, as there are always more concerned residents than those that feel able or compelled to lodge objections. Past development controls in Thirroul have been notoriously loose and have resulted in significant loss of original housing. If this development is allowed to proceed in its current form, it will continue this loss of history and streetscape and set a precedent that will allow further erosion of the suburb's already much diminished built heritage values. Wollongong Council has recognised that Thirroul has a character worth preserving, and yet here, seemingly inexplicably, we have Council going against its own stated aspirations for the suburb. In the absence of some Council commitment to streetscape conservation, we are asking the planning panel to assist with preventing a jarringly discordant development and a potentially devastating precedent. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Jeremy Park.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Park, 63 George Street, Thirroul. So we live in a 1914 weatherboard, which is right at the other end of the street. I'd just like to thank the last speaker for everything he said. I wanted to speak on behalf of my family and also friends who live around the area, just in a more general sense of complaints that we have about the DA. We feel that the developers pushed the individual aspects of the design in every aspect he could, which might meet, you know, the criteria of council. However, we feel that when you step back and look at the development as a whole with all those criteria, that cumulatively it's just taking the development way too far. I think it's kind of obvious to read between the lines here that there's a desire here to make money without the concern for the livability of the development or for the benefit of the community. The people that are left to live in it and alongside it. As mentioned before, it's an R2 area, and we feel that a development at this density sets a dangerous precedent for other people in the area to follow. I agree with the Thirroul community group that there's potential for development in the area, and there's already a lot of R3 and R4 areas given in Thirroul. But at 28 George Street, we're in a suburban area with no footpaths, a lot of parking, a lot of people are parking on the street, and if you go there at school time, in the peak hours, before and after school, you'll see that everyone's walking on the street because the slopes are too steep to walk on. And we feel that when we had children, we thought it was quite a dangerous experience and not enjoyable experience walking up and down the street with prams, having to go around cars and avoiding, oncoming traffic. There's also a concern that having such a multi-dwelling complex with such a steep driveway sloping down into a pinch point on Colton Lane is a major safety issue. If anyone tried to reverse out of that driveway, God forbid, if there was a pedestrian or another car, then there could be easily be an incident. I wrote originally to the council on the first proposal with the 31 other people, and I won't go over all the design issues that I had with it that I think has already been covered and other speakers will cover as well. Except to say that I wanted to see if it had been missed that the drainage on the property might be an issue. There's a deep soil zone, however, that lies at the top of the block. So the hard surface is downhill from the soil retention area. There's also, as far as my understanding of the plans, being a layman, I can't see any drainage or culverts or grates in the driveway to absorb the water flow coming down that long driveway, which will just hit Kelton Lane and continue into the creek. The downstairs living room, to me, also looks like a bit of an afterthought in the design, and each townhouse is overshadowing the next. The area is well known for the lack of light in winter, and I know, because I live in that street, that we lose the sun at 3:30 in June. So I think that there's an issue here with the alliance of light and the livability of that living room space downstairs. I also wanted to note that it's common for people these days in smaller dwellings like this to use the garages for storage, office and workspaces, and not for parking their car. So I would guarantee that we're going to end up with a lot more cars on the street with such density. The other point I wanted to make was that if this DA did get green light, I feel that it would set a precedent for others to cash in and follow suit. There's multiple blocks on George Street that are larger than 28 George Street. My house sits on 1900, my neighbour's 1600, and there's some larger blocks further up the street as well. So if we were all to follow suit and do something of a similar density along these lines, then soon the area would become jammed and unlivable for the residents left. And just lastly, I wanted to say that with 13 Pass Avenue, understand that that was knocked back for overdevelopment reasons, and the locals were happy about that. And that was on a smaller block which had rear lane access and was only asking for 4 dwellings. So we hope that that sets the tone for development in the area.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The next speaker is Aaron Sutcliffe.
I'm Aaron Sutcliffe. I live at 15 Jennifer Crescent. I've also worked in local council for the City of Sydney Council and Wollongong Council for a little while, in the insurance and risk departments, and also was a former police officer. So I'm just going to be talking about road safety. Dear esteemed panel members, I would like to bring to your attention the likelihood of increased traffic congestion on or around the proposed development of 28 George Street, Thirroul. As you're aware, there is a proposal for 5 new townhouses to be built on the site. This, in my opinion, will increase motor vehicle traffic in the vicinity by greatly increasing the number of vehicles positioned around the busy intersection of George Street and Kelton Lane. It is my opinion that on the balance probabilities that most of the residents of the proposed development will own a vehicle or two, and in many cases may own more. They may utilise the garage proposed for parking, but may also wish to use the roadway to park their vehicles and use the garage provided as a storage facility. It can also be suggested with some certainty the visitors will want to also park on or around 28 George Street, further reducing the viability for pedestrian access already limited by heavy traffic use. Unlike many suburban streets, George Street can be considered a major thoroughfare as it provides the only alternative route for vehicles to gain access to Bullo Pass when there is a traffic disturbance, as well as providing everyday access to Lawrence Hargrave Drive. Many people also park in George Street in favour of parking in the overcrowded railway car park designated for commuters. George Street is also a major route for pedestrians as well, as it provides local residents with access to shops, schools and the railway station. The only other nearby streets are Virginia Crescent and Phillip Street, which contain very steep hills, which makes it almost impossible for pedestrians to utilise. Due to the steep incline of the nature strip on the northern side of George Street, many elderly residents, mothers with prams, children riding bicycles and disabled people using mobility scooters have no alternative but to share the road surface with passing vehicles because there is no designated footpath. Section 238 of the New South Wales Road Rules affords pedestrians roadway access without incrimination because there is no footpath. Whilst normally this would not pose a problem, a serious problem arises to the safety of pedestrians when two vehicles are parked opposite each other and another two vehicles are wanting to drive up and down the street. Whilst the duty of care does reside with the driver to drive carefully in such situations, the possibility of an injury or even a fatality increases when driving visibility reduces due to inclement weather, sun setting or night time, exposing the unsuspecting pedestrian to a possible collision. Having been involved with the New South Wales Police Force, I personally have had the unenviable task of informing loved ones that their relatives have been killed in a traffic accident, and I do not want this to occur as a result of increased housing density, causing unnecessary traffic congestion and reducing pedestrian safety as a result. George Street, in my opinion, was never designed as a major thoroughfare and instead was designed as a normal suburban street. This can be validated by the width of the road and the road markings. This has, however, changed due to the rapid development Thrill has recently experienced due to the overdevelopment of the land, whereby once the site was used for only single dwelling and not developed to accommodate multi-dwelling living. Parking will also be of a premium on Wednesday and Thursday when the garbage bins are placed out on the street, which will further reduce the parking availability for nearby residents, members of the public and pedestrian usage that frequent shops, the Ryans Hotel, restaurants and other utilities located in Thirroul. Whilst I am not against development in the area and I believe this is a necessary progression in any civilised society, I am of the opinion that any expansion must be measured and evaluated not only using statutory provisions but also careful analysis, logical reasoning and common sense. Therefore, a more reasonable outcome, in my opinion, would be to limit the number of buildings on the site to more accommodating two or three dwellings. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Nigel Puckeridge.
Good afternoon. My name is Nigel Puckeridge from 35 George Street. As I reside directly across the road from the proposed development and next door to Kelton Lane, I wish to address the road and traffic safety concerns, the proposal, which is shared by many others in the neighbourhood and others here. It is our view that Kelton Lane is already an extremely busy traffic and pedestrian shared zone, which would be further congested with the traffic of another 11 vehicles seeking access to and from the site. The current development plan has parking available for 11 cars on site at any one time. It is feasible that each property could in fact have more cars and on occasion visitors, increasing their number further. If some of the garages are used for storage purposes, as is common, vehicles will be parked out on the road, further congesting turning and passing room at the entrance and exit to Kelton Lane. My wife and I both work from home, allowing us to get an all-day perspective on how much activity the lane gets with current traffic levels. We sit on our balcony to eat our lunch most days and are constantly bewildered by the dangerous risks taken by the drivers that use the lane. We have lived here for 12 years and have observed the increasing amount of traffic in this time. The lane is the only other arterial to Lawrence Hargrave Drive between the north and southern suburbs. with the increased amount of cars on Lawrence Hargrove Drive, people are using the lane as an alternative route to avoid traffic. I have done my own traffic survey on the past two mornings, and on each morning, 90-plus cars passed through the lane in a one-hour period, and that was at school time. It was around about the 8 to 9 o'clock mark, from 8 till 9. The junction is essentially going from being a three-way troublesome spot to a four-way intersection with potential for a serious incident. The development does state that it provides parking for its owners and a turning circle. I do not believe it is a realistic proposition that the residents will drive forward out of their driveways, reversing out of the garage and down their steep drive. Once they reach the bottom of their drive, their vision will inevitably be impaired by the cars that are parked on the street, making it quite difficult to approach the intersection safely backwards. It is quite feasible that there will be four cars coming from each direction at any time, one of those reversing. I see this as a recipe for disaster. I understand a traffic survey has been carried out by Wollongong Council Traffic Authority. In my opinion, this traffic situation requires a much more thorough review to give a more realistic analysis. Wollongong Council some 13 years ago acknowledged that this area was already deemed a dangerous spot for traffic and pedestrians, although for practical reasons has kept it open. I believe that the proposed development should be significantly reduced, where there will be adequate parking, realistic turning circles, and extra visitor parking to keep cars off the street, and hence reduce the real risk of accidents. I ask that you consider the safety issues presented and understand that this is the view of many others that live in this area. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. The next speaker is Brendan Stolk.
Good evening, panel members. My name's Brendan Stolk. I live at 26 George Street, Thirroul.
Just remind me, is that on the east or the western side?
Eastern side.
Thank you.
Eastern side, yeah. So, dear esteemed panel members, I'm here before you today a little bit perplexed at this development even being considered in an R2 low-density area. It's incomprehensible that a development of this scale has been proposed in this location. It directly contravenes the aim and objectives of the Wollongong City Council Development Control Plan. And I quote, "To ensure new development contributes to the safe and livable environments. I would argue this development does not meet this objective, but is a blatant overdevelopment that is attempting to cram as many people onto one block for the financial benefit of a developer. As adjoining neighbour, I would dispute claims that this development has not considered the amenities of its neighbours on the following grounds. Manoeuvrability in the driveway, health and wellbeing concerns and privacy issues. In the original development application, the developer states, the development has been designed to ensure the privacy of adjoining developments is maintained. Windows have been offset where possible with no primary living areas at first floor level. In the new design, for which we were not consulted, plans reflect the complete opposite of this. New plans have doubled the number of windows of the original plan, all from living areas that are now located upstairs. From our property alone, we have 8 windows from neighbouring living areas that will directly overlook our private outdoor space and bedroom window. This is a violation of our privacy and would greatly impact our quality of life. We should not be forced to pull our blinds and not use our own backyard because of an oversized development built next door. Once open, these large windows will allow noise to carry into adjoining properties. The new plans now claim that the townhouses are 2 bedrooms. On closer inspection, there is another living space downstairs that potentially could become a 3rd bedroom. With little change to the footprint, it's just a loosely veiled attempt to coax you into believing the development is an impact and its impact on its neighbours is now smaller. 5 townhouses, regardless of bedrooms, each with 2 car spaces, is too many. In the Wollongong Local Planning Panel Assessment Report for the 13th of February 2018, the planner's comment states that the driveway is provided with compliant landscaping strip 1.5 metres wide to the eastern side, which will be planted to afford amenity to the adjoining neighbour. There is adequate manoeuvring area within the site for the vehicles to enter and exit the site in a forward direction. This statement is flawed, and I would argue that the driveway isn't compliant with the development controls outlined in the WCC DCP in relation to the adequate manoeuvring areas within the site for the vehicles to enter and exit the site in a forward direction. To elaborate, I make reference to DCP 5.6 access driveway requirements, the 5.6.1 objective, which states to provide adequate and safe vehicular access to all dwellings. Development control 5.6.2.2 says that all vehicles within a multi-dwelling development must provide vehicular manoeuvring areas to all parking spaces, so vehicles do not need to make more than a single turn to leave the site in a forward direction. The developer provides no substantiation to this claim with no direct factual evidence supplied, without any reference to turning circle diagrams. While there has been compliance of the additional 1.5 metre landscape strip added to the amended plan, there is now only a width of 5.8 metres from the garage wall front opening to the edge of the driveway. The original development plan showed turning circles on a diagram of a car 4.9 metres in length. It is highly doubtful that a car of this length could make a single point turn, leaving the garage parking space and rotating a full 90 degrees to a forward direction in a space of 90 centimetres, let alone a vehicle which is longer in length. This would require multiple point turns by any vehicle entering or leaving a garage space and hence not complying with the above-mentioned development control. This non-compliance raises serious concerns in relation to safety and wellbeing of adjoining neighbours. Cars reversing out of garages will frequently drive past the boundary of the driveway and into the landscaping vegetation strip, causing damage and destruction to the privacy screen plants and potentially causing damage to boundary fencing. Excessive noise and chemical pollutants from car exhaust caused by multiple point turns when manoeuvring vehicles will have an adverse impact on the health and wellbeing of neighbours, with their bedroom windows and private open spaces only a very small distance from these vehicles. This is clearly another example of gross overdevelopment for such a narrow block, and therefore adequate manoeuvring of vehicles entering and leaving the site in a safe manner cannot be achieved and does not meet the above DCP objective. So I'll just say in conclusion, in its current form at 28 George Street is too large. It's this proposed development went ahead, it would set a precedence in a low-density zoned area. The negative side effects on residents, both new and existing area, are of concerning nature and cannot be ignored. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one question.
Yep.
I take it that the revised plans that are now before the panel, but they weren't notified to you?
No.
You only had one notification?
Yes.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.
The next speaker is Susan Stopp. No. You're not speaking? Okay. Thank you. Patricia Donaldson.
Hello, I'm Patricia Donaldson. I live at 26 George Street as well, which is a dual occupancy property. I'll probably repeat some of the things that Brendan said, but bear with me. In our submission to council, we pointed out four our major areas of concern were privacy, overshadowing, vehicle emissions, loss of view and noise. We pointed out that four of the proposed townhouses would overlook our house and two of them our private outdoor space. And the planning team, in addressing the concerns raised by submissions, stated that the proposal had been redesigned to minimise overlooking and that there were no balconies proposed on the upper levels for units 2 to 5. The redesigned proposal, which has now been approved by planning, has in fact completely reversed this. When the kitchen, dining and family rooms have been relocated to the first floor of these proposed townhouses, thus negating any supposed improvement by the removal of the balconies from the original DA. This means that the dining and family rooms of these townhouses, with what appear to be floor-to-ceiling windows, will be overlooking our house and all of our private outdoor space. The slope of the block at 28 will exacerbate this overlooking, as the ground is higher towards the back of the block and higher than our block. So private open space for us is reduced to zero. This also raises the issue of overshadowing. The planning team state that the submitted shadow diagrams demonstrate compliance in relation to solar access for our property. We contend that these diagrams are not an accurate representation because they fail to take into account the topography, the existing built environment, and vegetation, which severely limits the amount of sun our house and outdoor space receive, particularly during winter. The efficiency of our roof solar panels may also be affected. The height of the proposed development, in combination with the 4.5 metre increase from street level to the rear of the block, must have a greater effect than the developer's diagrams suggest. The development allows on-site parking for 11 vehicles. We will be subjected to the noise and exhaust fumes from these vehicles as they drive in and out of their garages. Given the tight space allowed for manoeuvring, we can expect significant emissions within 4 metres of our kitchen, dining and living areas. Exhaust fumes are notorious for being unhealthy for both humans and the environment due to the presence of chemical substances that are all too well known for being harmful to humans. It seems unreasonable we should be subjected to such a degree of disturbance in a quiet residential street. The proposed development will in effect create a 7 to 11 metre high uninterrupted wall adjacent to the western side of our home. In addition to the issues raised in our original submission to council, is the total loss of our view of the Illawarra Escarpment from our private outdoor space. This space will be transformed from a pleasant courtyard and garden into a darkened area overlooked by a brutal facade. Lastly, council planners state that noise is not expected to be generated above normal domestic levels. For us, that means normal, multiplied by 5. It's hard to believe that anyone could reasonably say this isn't a major loss of what the report from the planning team refers to as amenity. Thank you.
Can I just ask you a question? Your private open space, is that in front of your...
No, it's at the rear of our
property. It's at the rear. Okay.
Are you at the rear or are you at the front?
We're at the front.
You're the front house.
Yes, front house.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And the last speaker we have on the submitter side is Braden Ellen.
Thank you very much. I really am Braden Ellum, and as you say, I am the last. And I'm at 26 George Street as well, where I live with Trish, from whom you just heard. Council's response to our concerns is really what I want to talk about. So that's in this document here that, of course, you have and we have. I'm not going to talk about all of the points that are in it, but they identify 9 residents' concerns and they try to respond to them. But as one of the earlier speakers, Nick Gartrell, said, we find the responses inexplicable and perhaps also at the same time actually unexplained as well. And what I mean by that is there's a series of assertions which it's difficult for us as laypeople and not part of the process to respond to, but we've certainly tried to do our best and I'll continue that. So I won't go through all of the 9, and I'll try not to repeat too many of the earlier points which you've heard. But I'll take perhaps the 3 biggest ones to begin with together. The overdevelopment of the rule, the overdevelopment of the site, and our concern that it's inconsistent with requirements of the DCP and the LEP. So all we're told is that the report, in the report, is that, quote, the proposal is permissible under the LEP. The proposal has been redesigned and is fully compliant with the WELP. There's no explanation for these statements, so it's hard to respond, although I think that Annette and Murray from the Thurl Village Committee did a pretty good job of doing that. Now, obviously it has been redesigned, but in some respects the proposal is less satisfactory than it was. And the submission has the same floor space ratios as the original DA. It's the same overall size. As Patricia just said, it's still one big two-storey building of 5 units, obliterating views and private outdoor space. And in some respects, which other people have said, it's actually less satisfactory because of the shift of the living spaces from the ground floor to the first floor. Is it out of character with the street? That's a third. That was the third original complaint that council tried to respond to. And again, we're just told that the proposal has been redesigned. That's all it says. As other people have pointed out, the structure appears no less imposing, and this is clear actually when you look in the document, the structure appears no less imposing from George Street than it did in the first DA. Now, then the council tries to respond to the concern around the amenity impacts to neighbouring properties. And the major ones that we were concerned with, as you've heard, were overshadowing, privacy, loss of views and noise. We think they remain major concerns. I won't reiterate them, but to underscore this, let me draw your attention to the applicant's own words in the first DA. The development has been designed to ensure the privacy of adjoining development is maintained with no primary living areas at first floor level. So the revision actually undoes their own stated aim. Traffic and parking, you've heard detailed concerns expressed about that, so I probably won't repeat much about that. I'll just say that I hope you enjoyed your visit to Thirroul this afternoon on a very lovely sunny day, and that you can be pleased that you happened to be there in the very afternoon that the foliage in Kelton Lane was trimmed for the first time in several years. As far as the parking goes, I do want to reiterate the point that other people have made, and I'm sorry to repeat it, but I think it's really important that a basic flaw in lots of approval processes is simply to treat the documents as if they're reality and lived experience, and they walk around anywhere in Wollongong, especially around Thirroul, will tell you, as people have said, that garages are used for storage and the real sighting is as likely as not to be, the real sighting of car parking is likely to be on the streets. Now, to conclude, I just want to say that there's been 31 objections in the short time available. I think that's a significant indication of community concern, as Nick said. And I'd like also to register, if I may, the concerns that we have about the overall process, which perhaps go a bit beyond your brief, but I would like to talk about them. I think it's important. We're worried that these sort of decisions are necessarily made on a case-by-case basis, even leaving aside the rights or wrongs of the case, but they're made on a case-by-case basis. This particular proposal does or doesn't comply with the local streetscape, the environment of the local area. And we say that we do need to take a holistic approach. Otherwise, development happens without any strategic plan at all, and happens by default if you're not considering the entire local environment and just any one particular instance. We think, unfortunately, that the proposal was unreasonable to begin with, and we think it's no more reasonable now.
Thank you. Before we go on to the applicant, is there any other people who want to speak tonight who didn't register? Thank you. If you could introduce yourself and tell us your address.
Sure thing. Leo Hillary, 71 George Street. So I haven't prepared anything. I objected to the original proposal. I just want to say this morning I walked my children to school. We walked down the hill. We walked opposite the area in question. And in that brief window, walking with two small children and a dog towards school, and which many other families do, both from George Street and Lachlan Street and many other streets, Pass Avenue included, around. In that brief window, we saw multiple cars trying to traverse into Kelton Lane, which, as you would have seen, is a single-width, dual-access point between two reasonably busy roads. So cars coming down George Street trying to turn into Kelton Lane, realising there's multiple cars coming up, stopping, reversing back up Kelton Lane with zero visibility, back into George Street, with cars coming down, cars coming up, pedestrians going either side. So whilst Kelton Lane's been discussed, the reality of it is significantly dangerous at high traffic
density and high pedestrian activity areas. With many children, many residents, as everyone said, there's no footpaths, so a lot of them are on the road, some of them are on the sides. And so directly opposite Kelton Lane, you obviously have potential for 11 vehicles coming out of this development, maybe frontways, maybe reversing. So one point earlier said you might have one reversing vehicle. You might have two, one of them actually coming up back onto the intersection because they erred in trying to get down Kelton Lane too quickly, which happens quite regularly. So I just want to reiterate the implications of putting an already overburdened narrow lane, which was never designed to really be a thoroughfare, adding to that burden will actually cause a significant safety risk. So that's all I wanted to say. Everyone else has covered points.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, if you
want to
come up to the microphone and introduce yourself, please.
Hello, my name's Christy Longworth. I live at 35 George Street, directly across the road. And I just think one thing that wasn't brought up was all the bins, if you have 10 bins, one large one for either recycling or gardening, and then one smaller bin, the red bin, when you put them all together, they take up a significant width of the property. And I don't know if that was really looked at in the proposal. So I'd just like you to at least have a look at that for Wednesdays and Thursdays. If there's a car parked there, there's nowhere to put those bins because of the slope of the land. You can't put them on the grass. They have to go onto the road. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And there's a gentleman here.
Alan Bird. I live at number 30, which is the western neighbour. My mother owns the house. She couldn't be here because she has difficulty getting around. My brother is also here, so we're kind of finding out for her, but we both live there as well. We have similar concerns to the people at number 26. We'll lose some morning light, we feel. There will be a lack of privacy because on the plans where the backyards of the units face our eastern side, they'll be looking directly into our yard, and they will see people at the front porch coming and going. They will see us coming up and down our driveway as well. So I personally feel that there's a lack of privacy there. I don't know much about drainage, but I do know that we've already had problems with water runoff from surrounding properties that have affected. The soil in that area is very much clay once you get down a few inches, and so it just doesn't absorb the water. So I would expect that there's going to be more problems with water runoff if they haven't really attended to the drainage well. Once again, the increased traffic in Kelton Lane. During the time that I've lived there, Kelton Lane has become busy beyond whatever was designed for. And given, as already been pointed out, that the driveway to number 28 is directly opposite. You cannot help but have people coming and going up and down Kelton Lane and take it beyond its capacity. That's my main concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. There's one more gentleman. Well, you look like a gentleman to me anyway.
I hope so. I'm Robert Bird. I live at 30 George Street. Everybody's discussed concerns that I had, so I won't go over them again. But I want to mention the environmental impact. They're talking about clearing all the trees in that area. The persimmon tree that's in that yard is a permanent home to ringtail possums, which are protected species. There is a family of bandicoots that run back and forward between the bushes of our fence and their fence near the persimmon tree. they're an endangered protected species. Even the humble blue-tongued lizard is a protected species under the New South Wales Parks and Wildlife Act of 1975. The other trees in the area are permanent homes to brush-tail possums, and the trees are home to a plethora of native Australian birds. So they're things that I think the developers aren't caring about. I think the developers are just want to make their money and go back to Sydney and forget about us. And that's all I've got to say.
Okay, thank you. Nobody else? Before we go move on to the applicant, I'd just like to thank all of the speakers for firstly, most of you who organised yourselves to speak on different topics. That's very, very helpful to the panel because it gives us a much better understanding of the issues than if everyone got up and repeated the same thing. So the panel is very appreciative of that. I'll just very quickly say something about the process because it's been raised about, you know, whether this is appropriate density or whether it's not. And I'm not making a comment either way as to whether this is appropriate or whether it's not, but I just wanted to explain the zoning, how that works, and the sorts of things that the panel, as a consent authority, are required to take into consideration, and the sorts of things that we potentially cannot take into consideration. So I guess the first thing I wanted to say is that the zoning of this land, even though it's predominantly single houses, permits this type of development, which is called multi-unit housing, townhouses, villas, however you want to call it. So there's a set of controls that, that first of all, it's a permissible form of development, and then there's a set of controls, some in the local environmental plan, some in the development control plan, and there's a hierarchy of plans, a local environmental plan sits higher in the tree than a development control plan. So basically the compliance with the local environmental plan is mandatory unless an applicant can justify a change from a departure from a standard. The development control plan's more of a guideline. So there's technical compliance. So we have a zone here that allows this form of development. Technically, this proposal, I'm not talking about its form or its design, but this proposal technically satisfies the zoning. So I guess that's the threshold issue. Then there's a whole lot of technical things that have to be satisfied, like traffic, car manoeuvring and private open space, overshadowing and those sorts of things, and there's various measures that we're required to apply to private open space, notwithstanding that a development may impact on somebody else's private open space. We have standards that we need to, that say a certain amount of impact is acceptable, particularly because the zone allows this type of development, but it's only acceptable up to a point. But it's understood that there would be some impact of a new development, but a reasonable impact. I guess the real issue about this development is the merit issues and the design issues. And you've actually explained your concerns about those issues very well tonight. The panel will be asking the applicant to respond to those issues. But I just wanted to make it clear that the zoning allows for it. Just because you can tick all the boxes doesn't necessarily mean it's a good development, doesn't necessarily mean it should be approved. And as I say, I'm not prejudging the decision that the panel might make tonight at all. But
this is one of those applications where you have technical compliance, but you have a number of merit issues and value judgments that need to be made about the development. So I just wanted to explain that to make sure everyone, I'm sure you all understood anyway, because you spoke very well. Okay, now we have...
Chairman, can we ask a question based on your comments or not?
You may. I'll make an allowance for you, Mr. Knowles.
The two major sentence that legislation in endangered species is important, and in view of Chief Justice Brian Preston's decision on coal mining, I think you've got to say, is there any state legislation that may overrule the LEP and the DCP? This gentleman suggested the endangered species legislation that federal and state must be addressed, and that's that the answer. And that's why I'm slightly questioning you on whether other legislation may, to some extent, overrule the land and environment and the planning legislation. And obviously, everyone's interested now in view of Chief Justice Preston's ruling about climate control and Paris Agreement signed by a federal government overruling the financial and other aspects. And I'll leave to much more learned people than myself to interpret Chief Justice Preston's ruling, because obviously it's a new ball game.
Well,
the newspaper's comment is.
The simple answer is that the Environmental Planning and Assessment Act, which is the act that we assess and make decisions under, requires the consent authority to take all those matters into consideration. There's no doubt about that. Thank you. Now, the applicant, we have Marco Lissica, the applicant, and Ben McNamara, the town planner. I'm not sure whether you both wanted to come and field some questions or whether just Mr. McNamara, you... Okay. So you're Marco? Yep, okay. Now, if you wanted to make a presentation to the panel, you're welcome to. It's not essential.
I did write something up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Okay, I thought it would be best to give a bit of an overview of the background of how we came to this site. My client has purchased this site with the intention of building and relocating from his family home in Kirriville. My client has purchased this site in Thurl with the intentions of building and relocating from his family home in Kirriville and joining the Thurl community. I would just firstly like to say it was not my client's or my intentions to cause such a disturbance within the community, and we have tried our very best to satisfy and address any concerns from the council and the objectors. My client is looking to relocate to one of the units and keep the remaining. As such, no subdivision has been proposed. We did not believe that this type of development was at all of character for George Street, as there are a number of townhouse developments only doors down and being a street away from the city centre and a short walk from the train station. We have noted that one of the main concerns from the objectors was a landscape strip down the eastern side boundary and the effect that it would have on number 26 George Street. We have therefore increased this to a minimum of 1.5 metres landscape strip and provided adequate vegetation to help buffer the neighbouring dwelling, as will increase the driveway to 5.8 metres, further exemplifying this buffer. We did intend to provide as much separation for number 26 and believe this increase will help assure the health and amenity and noise will have minimal effects on any neighbouring dwellings. I've also noted that council and objectors concerned from the previous arrangement of stack parking, and we have taken this on board and proposed to provide two side-by-side parking spaces for each townhouse, exceeding the minimum amount of spaces required to further help and reassure we are doing everything in our power to keep as many cars off the public roads. The design of development is an outcome of the objections received and council comments. Therefore, both the scale and bulk of the development have been reduced and we achieve almost 100% compliance on every point. We have worked tirelessly with council to achieve an outcome which is now supported, and we believe will have a minimal impact on the community of Thurl, but be a great addition and a development the community will be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure the panel has a number of questions. I might start off with a question about drainage.
Yes.
Obviously, there's some concerns about
yep.
stormwater in the area. I don't think we have the drainage, the stormwater concept plan, but can you explain
Yeah, so there was a number of the stormwater pits. One is located in the deep soil zone. There's a few located on the driveway, and this all leads to retention pit before it actually hits the streets.
So what does that mean? There are pits in the driveway?
Correct.
And there's pits at the rear?
At the rear as well, just to help.
So does that... the concern was that stormwater would run down the driveway and increase the existing issue. What stops that from happening?
I believe that the stormwater that we have provided is adequate. This is given from... it has been created by my stormwater engineer, who's been... has had such involvement on a few different townhouse developments, and it's gone through council as well, and council has provided that it was adequate.
Okay. Helena.
Sorry, are you the you're the applicant,
yes,
but
so
are you
sure.
the architect? Or?
Yes.
So you're the architect.
Yep. So
great.
I was the one who designed. I'm director of 10 Star, and I've been doing this for about 10 years now.
Okay, terrific. So can you just explain? You heard some of the objectors raise concern about the original application. Clearly identified that the living areas were in the lower levels of the building, and to ensure the privacy of the adjacent dwellings. Can you just outline your rationale?
One of the main ways we come to this new design was the fact that stack parking was one of the main concerns from the objectors and council. So our only alternative was to have the side-by-side parking, and this forced us to put the living rooms upstairs. We have now addressed that privacy concerns by having 1.8 metre high frosted glass. This will allow sufficient or almost 100% of light to come in with no actual privacy concerns to any of the neighbouring dwellings.
So, sorry, just to clarify, you're saying that those floor-to-ceiling windows are
1.8 metre frosted glass.
Frosted glass.
So, we won't be able to look outside.
You can't look out of them.
Correct. But it will provide, sunlight.
No. Sorry, are you the applicant or the...
The other question I had was just in relation to the front facade. So originally, and actually the roof form. So the original plans look like you had the skillion roof on the development.
Correct.
And you had a reasonably large window in the front elevation.
Yep.
So now that's changed and you've got like a parapet in front of the roof form, which in my view adds to the bulk of the building and doesn't really, in the elevations you can't see you're not showing the rear roofs, but it's not a form of development that is consistent with the character of the area in that it doesn't have a pitched roof and you've got these parapets so you can't see the eaves of the building. So can you just explain what your thought was alternative design?
So from our previous design, we've originally had the skillion roof, which had a greater degree of pitch, and one of the main concerns that we found was the objectors and their concern of overshadowing. So this led us to have now 2.4-metre high ceilings, both the ground and first floor, and also reducing the pitch, which will essentially create less of an overshadow to the neighbouring dwellings. So this is how we got to...
So you're saying that you've reduced the height of the...
Correct, and we've also lowered the pitch of the roof.
Okay, and yet when you look at the elevations, the roof and the floor to ceiling heights have actually... Sorry, the floor levels on each of the units... have actually increased in the revised plans.
That was because one of the other concerns was the amount of excavation. So now, without excavating, we've just stepped it up, the site itself.
So you've reduced the excavation, so you're not cutting into the site.
Correct. That was one of council's concerns.
Right. Okay.
So that just played hand in hand, and then to reduce the floor height of the or the roof height. We've had to reduce the pitch of the roof to make it smaller.
Okay.
Andy?
I suppose the key issue that I picked up from some of the submissions and the speakers tonight was the issue of how the character of the Thurl area and how the... statements that currently exist about character, they're attempting to retain the existing character, and that it's seen that this development doesn't really do that. How do you feel? Can you explain how you feel that this actually meets those character statements in terms of its visual appearance relative to surrounding development.
So the way we approach this, we were looking to provide a modern design for the Thurl community. We have taken some influence from surrounding neighbourhoods, and we did go for a bit of a drive around, and we have worked with council as well to come to you know, the facade and the look of it, to find something we thought that was acceptable, as it is not located in a conservation area and is surrounded by quite a few old cladded houses, which essentially will get developed in the future as well.
Anything else, Andy? Keep thinking. Okay, yep. Thanks.
Can I just ask you, with the doors that you've proposed in the living spaces, are they like bifold doors that
sliding.
Open up?
Sliding.
They're just sliding doors?
Yes, stacker doors. So
one-panel slides?
Two-panel slides. Oh, so which? Downstairs?
Upstairs.
Or fixed?
The windows are fixed?
Fixed, correct.
So they're not openable at all?
Not openable at all.
Okay, and they've got a 1.8
metre frosted glass. It's right. similar to what you'll find in a bathroom. For any privacy.
And my other question was, maybe that's not your level of expertise, but was the landscape plan. Again, I suppose it goes back to the issue of character and the nature of this area, and when you look at the front yards, you see a lot of greenery, very attractive kind of gardenscape. And the landscape plan seems to have adopted a very modern approach with, you know, grevilleas at the back and not very usable, not very soft landscaping, quite harsh for this. What's kind of driven that approach? Is it the fact it's quite a contemporary building and that's all?
To be honest, you're correct. It's out of my expertise. I had no input on the actual landscape plan, but any suggestions will be taken on board if you'd like to make any comments on that.
Okay.
One of the, or a couple of the speakers raised the issue about traffic, vehicle manoeuvring on site.
Yes.
And that they felt that the driveway may be too narrow for people to do the manoeuvring reverse and out in one go. Now, I saw a plan in here, and I can't lay my hands on it now, that didn't actually show swept paths, but it showed some lines indicating where a car might manoeuvre. Have you run swept paths over this?
Yes, I have. I'll bring up the plan for you. So on plan 15.
15, is it?
Landscape and coverage plan. So I've provided B85 turning paths.
Oh, that's the one, yeah.
So we have 5.8 metres from the actual garage itself to the edge of the landscape strip.
So let's just take unit 5, for example.
Yes.
They're all the same, but let's take unit 5. The area that you've drawn there, as to the maximum amount of reversing, the vehicle's still got the front end in the garage. Am I reading that correctly?
So where it does start reversing?
Where it finishes reversing. I mean, what's the distance of from the garage
to the edge of the?
There's some overhang, isn't there? On the
correct.
On the first floor.
Correct.
5.5. Okay. Okay. So your turning path, I see. Your turning path is then underneath the overhang.
Correct. The turning paths I've used, they're just a template I get from the Australian standards.
Yeah, I understand the process, but I was not reading the plans correctly. All right. So that's a technical compliance, I guess you would say, in terms of that. All right. Any other questions?
So just going back to the upper level living area, so you're now saying, so now I understand that the family room windows are closed, they're not openable. So where are the windows in that room?
In the kitchen.
So there's no cross ventilation?
No cross ventilation, no.
And there's only a... Because there appears to be on the elevation, it appears to be a highlight window in the kitchen. So is that operable?
Yeah, that is operable, yes, correct.
But it's above the bench, the
above the bench,
bench,
yeah. It's totally openable, yeah.
So what sort of... Because it's... I'm just trying to understand what the height of that window is. It looks like it's 1.8 metres up in the air.
No, sir. It'll be right above the bench, so it'll be a metre off the... It'll be 1 metre off the floor level.
That's not what it's shown on the elevation.
Looks like at least 1.5.
Yeah.
It's got to be 1.8.
Yeah, it looks like
1.8. Yeah, you're right.
I'm just thinking I wouldn't be able to open it.
Okay.
I don't think.
We do have the actual...
If you look at the elevation, is that drawn incorrectly? Is that the window we're talking about, just so I understand?
Yeah, sure. So it would be a metre off the... or 1.1 metres off the actual floor level itself.
But it's above the bench. So the
above
bench
the
is
bench. Above the kitchen bench, yeah.
So that's not drawn correctly then, because it's actually on there. You can see it's at least 1.8 metres off the floor level. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm just concerned that that room doesn't have any ventilation.
That one looks like it's drawn correctly.
It does look to me that it is...
Unit 1 looks like it's drawn correctly, but unit 2 is incorrect.
Okay, unit 1 is lower, but unit 2, which is the same for 2 to 5...
So, that will be drawn incorrectly. Yeah, correct.
Right.
Okay. We do have the option of creating awning windows for the other on the other side. That would let some cross-ventilation in, if you do like.
Sorry, I'm not following. You have the option... What's an awning window?
An awning window that pops out.
Where are they shown, though, on the plans?
No, it's an option.
Yeah, we do have the option. And we would still keep all the privacy concerns at bay as well, by not being able to look out the window but open as it's sliding.
I'm just trying to understand what that's going to be like for the amenity of those units. So you've got 1.8 opaque glass. You can't see through it. That's your eastern frontage. So... the amenity inside that unit is going to be very poor.
In terms of
that being your living area and you can't actually look out. You can only look up at... You've got a very small area that you can look out to, the light can get into.
Correct, yeah.
But it's not a very nice amenity for those units.
I feel that having living areas upstairs, you do face some privacy concerns, and this is one of our ways we could actually... combat that concern and not have any sort of privacy issues to neighbouring dwellings.
But I think it's coming at the cost of actually reducing the amenity of the units themselves, so they're not going to be attractive. Well, not they won't be you've got no cross ventilation, and in addition you've got no outlook.
Yep.
And these aren't open.
Just appears to be that you're squeezing too much onto the site, because you can't even create an appropriate amenity for the units that you're designing.
Do you disagree? I do disagree a little bit, because saying here we've got most apartment buildings, they do have unoperable windows, and you still have great amenity within those apartment buildings.
Well, this is not an apartment area. This is an area that's a low density residential neighbourhood.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll leave it there.
Okay.
Any other questions? No. Yeah, would you like to come up and introduce yourself? I need you to come up here so it's recorded, and if you can tell us your names and...
My name is Chris. I'm the owner of 28 George Street Thirroul.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to that question, we're happy to make them sliding door windows and have like a screening system in front of them, or a louver system that's adjustable for privacy issues.
Yeah, okay. So you've only got privacy then while the windows are closed. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about, a louver system?
Yeah, but this essentially is just to make the community happy. That's why we've done the frosted. So we can't see out, they can't see in. I'm more than happy to have sliding door windows there. We can have a screening system, a louver system that's adjustable for privacy concerns.
Do you hear what I'm saying about the fact that the measures that you're putting in place to address the impacts that you're potentially causing are resulting in a substandard amenity within your own development? So it would appear on the face of it that actually the problem is there's too much development because you can't address those impacts without reducing the quality of your own internal amenity for the units that you're designing.
Well, I'm more than happy to have them as sliding windows to create that cross-ventilation.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, continue.
My name is Mario. I'm one of the owners. Just to answer the question about the water, the storm water, I have been building for 24 years in Wollongong. I'm a local builder. When we do a project like this, 90% of the water will be contained. Only the landscape water will be free. The driveway water, actually, the driveway almost built edge for it to contain the water in. And then before the footpath, we'll have a grate. So the water run on the driveway, it will hit the grate. And then from the grate, it will go through a pipe to the storm water.
Yeah, look, the reason that I asked the question of the architect is that I wanted to give him an opportunity to explain to the residents how the stormwater works on these things, on these types of developments. And in generally, it's a requirement of the council that the water flowing off the site post-development is no more in either volume or velocity than pre-development. And the way to achieve that is with an on-site stormwater detention, which I'm sure is part of this proposal. But I was hoping that the architect could have explained that to you, but he couldn't. So
I can answer this too. The architect is a young boy, really. He's not experienced in that. But when we get the plan, whether architectural or structural or stormwater, we look at it and we make sure we correct it. And then we send it back to the consultant to do the right thing.
Yeah, I understand that. But the general public has a general, concern about all of these other experts signing off on things. Yeah, and what I was trying to explain how it works. And hopefully I've done that now, that the council wouldn't accept anything that increased that flow.
Correct, yeah. Because there will be stormwater pits. It does go to a retention tank. It has an orifice plate which slows down the flow of water to the street. And it doesn't get drained to the creek at all.
Okay. Excuse me. You had an opportunity to speak. We're not having a discussion about it.
We should have a concept stormwater plan. What's the plan? It's showing.
Well, that's right.
Showing the pit, the detention. No.
We don't have it. We don't have it. I've no doubt the council has it, but the issue is done now. Yeah. I mean, the issue was I was giving the architect the opportunity to explain to the residents how that wasn't a problem.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Sorry, that's not his field of expertise. So.
Well, anyway. Okay, is there anything else you wanted to say?
All what we could say, the overall development is comply with DCP and setback and driveway and garages. Is everything normal as 20 years back we've been building?
Well, it doesn't quite comply with the setbacks, but you are asking for an exception.
Correct, there is one slight variation at the front with the visitor car park. I think it's 300 mil or so.
Yeah.
0.9% off the dessert.
Yeah, I understand what it is, but you can't say it complies with everything when it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Okay. It's not 100% compliance.
Is there anything else? No, thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I maybe ask, these are the developers, their view on the issue of character? You heard some of the concerns raised by the residents that they felt that the building design and its appearance didn't fit the character of the area, and they were concerned that it had more of a commercial appearance because of its modern design. Would you be open to a review of that design to be more in keeping with the character of the Thirroul statements that were discussed by the residents?
Definitely. I think it does. It fits the character of the existing or the new developments coming up in the area, but I'm more than happy to make changes. changes to the appearance to make it fit to the streetscape better. Definitely open to suggestions.
How would, as an applicant, I guess the question was,
it's not necessarily for us to tell you what the design should be, that there's a requirement in the development control plan that is open to interpretation.
Correct.
So this is your interpretation. Is that what you're saying? You've looked at the character and you believe that this is appropriate?
That is my interpretation, and also I believe we've had council's full approval with it too, so they okay. feel the same way as yep. we do.
All right. Thank you. Anything else?
Definitely, they are against development in that area. We can understand that. We try to build something to harm no one and create no effect or very minimal effect. But at the same time, no one of all those gentlemen and ladies says this development will draw money to the area. It will draw 4 or 5 family living there. Yes.
Can you address all your comments through me, please?
If we stop building and everybody stop building, what do you have at Wollongong?
Sir, I want to answer. Can you look at me when you're speaking? Sorry. It's not you and them. You're addressing the panel.
Might affect some people a little, but does a lot of benefit too at the same time.
Okay. We understand that, and I think the residents understand that this type of development is permissible in the zone. I think people pretty well understand that, but it comes down to an issue as to whether or not this satisfies the requirement to be in keeping with the desired future character. Yes, thanks, Elena.
Sorry, I just wanted to
work with you guys and make changes to the facade.
Thank you.
I think that's what I just wanted to point out, that in the DCP, I think it's a shame that your planner's not here, because maybe the planner may have been able to assist you in putting a case and how he's looked at the DCP and assessed how it does comply. But the thing to look at is the DCP and the through all future character statement. And it does have some very clear clues in there for you, which are around pitched roofs and weatherboard buildings and eaves and the things that actually aren't demonstrated in your design as it stands at the moment.
Okay, we're open to interpretation. We're happy to take that on board. Okay. The pitched roof was just to minimise overshadowing on the neighbours, but if you guys want to go in that direction, we're more than happy to do so.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The chairman just reminded me that the issue of traffic was also raised, and the issue of cumulative impact, and a number of people I think actually expressed concern about how that could or ought to be addressed. I think that's a very valid issue for concern, and I think I'll ask the panel to consider that and maybe raise that with the council as something that the council could consider to be addressed on a broader scale, a broader strategic scale for Thirroul.
Thanks. And just to add to that, and we did visit the site this afternoon. Unfortunately, we would have liked to have time to go to the beach while we were there, but that didn't happen. And we actually observed all of the traffic issues that you were describing, I think. I mean, there's probably times when it's worse than what was when we were there, but we did observe the rat run down the lane. We were there at 3:30 or so. So we did see interesting manoeuvres. We did see cars not sure whether to stop for the car in front of them, that was because it wasn't what. So we understand that. And I guess what Andy said is certainly something that we will suggest to the council, because the bigger traffic issue is not something that this development can fix. So, you know, the way it works is you can only require a development to address the issues that it creates. So there's obviously, it's clear that there's a number of traffic issues, not just in Thirroul, but also anywhere in the northern suburbs there and along the beaches. And I'm just wondering, and it's really not my brief, but I'm just wondering if Mr. and Mrs. Jones, through the committee, whether you might make an approach to the council, if you haven't already done so, to talk about whether there's some traffic management issue measures that could be... You're doing that? Well, I'm glad to hear that you're doing it. You need to push very hard. And I know it's difficult for the council because it's not an easy issue to solve. I was discussing it with the council officer on the way back and, you know, we were saying, well, the RMS are looking at it and they're doing studies, but it's not like you can just build another road a couple of hundred metres to the west or the east. It's pretty constrained. So it is a big issue and it's one that we're aware of, and it's one that over time additional development will certainly have an impact on. I think when the council, the other thing too, the council will be probably revising its LEP over the next few years to some extent and looking at character and all of those things, and I urge you all to involve yourself in that to make sure that you heard. Thanks, Libby.
Can I just ask, there was a speaker who talked about a development that was refused on number 13, yeah, Pass Avenue. So how's that spelled? Is it P-A-S-S? Oh, 13 Pass, and is that in Thirroul as well?
Yes.
All right, thank you. That's what I just wanted.
Thank you. So that concludes the Wollongong Local Planning Panel for today. Thank you very much for your attendance. As I mentioned, our decisions will be published on the council's website, usually within 3 working days. Thank you.
I'd like to see a holistic approach. I regret in the first case.